Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Some of the best action written, period. I love the Northman culture. I liked Glockta a lot. Liked him. He's my least favorite in this book.
Oh.
Adua. A-D-U-A.
Ah.
Not Ardua. Yeah, so Adua.
Ottawa.
Yep.
Ottawa.
Sounds like Ottawa. Canada. It's Canada the whole time. That's a plot twist. The grim, dark world of Canada. These damn Canadians.
Da, 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 da.
We should forgive our enemies, but not before they are hanged.
Welcome, welcome everyone to the Tutorial Podcast. My name is Richard.
My name is Austin.
Today, as you can tell, we're talking about book two of the First Law trilogy, Before They Are Hanged.
Oh yeah.
We're actually going at a good click through these. We're actually going fast.
We're not teetering our totter, we're teetering our totter, if you know what I mean.
Oh, I do.
You actually gave me that. I'm so honored.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So we're talking Before They Are Hanged. If you want to be convinced to read the First Law at all, we have a video on the blade itself that's already out on the channel. We are going to be talking about book one before we spoil book two. So the first 5 to 10 minutes of this video will bring you up to speed, say, hey, blade itself, where'd that leave off before we spoil book two? We'll give our ratings and all that, and then we will go into spoilers. But
spoilers, spoiler-free for the first couple minutes on the blade, Before They Hanged, but
yes.
Full spoilers for the first book. So yes. You have been warned. Spoilers for the first book.
Check out our other video if you want to be convinced to read First Law. This is book two for First Law. All right. And just to kind of refresh for this frame, this is book two of a trilogy. There's 9 books in this whole series. I have a feeling we're going to get to all of them eventually because you've only read the first trilogy.
I have also read the Heroes, but...
One of those standalones?
Best Served Cold.
Okay.
So I went on to Best Served Cold. Quite liked it,
nice.
But I am waiting for you.
Okay, okay.
So you'll get there. You'll get there soon.
Okay, great. So we read this. Rich, bring us up to speed. Where'd Blade itself leave off? Where does this book start?
Blade itself left off with the Fellowship came together. Baez has assembled his crew, and they're going off to find something.
A seed.
The seed. They're going to get the seed.
By the way, in my mind, I'm going, is this Joe Abercrombie's sexual innuendo? I didn't know where this was going with it. I didn't understand, but okay, go on. Yeah.
Then we have Bethod from the north is invading the Union. We have the Dogman and his group along with Colonel West now going to war. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen there? Seems like the Union has been underestimating the Northmen. We as the audience get to see how competent the Northmen actually are. The Union doesn't know what's coming. Then also the Gurkish.
They're there as well, yes.
They're there as well. Yes. We don't know too much other than they're pretty bad. They're not good, and they're coming too.
And Glockta's in Dagaska solving this mystery.
Where we leave off, he's like, you're gonna go.
You're gonna go and solve this mystery, essentially.
Yep.
Of who killed... The previous
Roger Rabbit.
Roger Rabbit, yes. Yeah. Precisely Roger Rabbit.
Robert.
That would be quite the duel, Roger Rabbit and Glockta.
Oh, God.
Now, to give a quick background on this book and Blade itself, a lot of people like this one even better than book one. And Rich, you came off fists flying in the air.
Yep.
You were cringing your democracy. You said that book one was your 5-star. Floored you. You loved it. I how do your expectations exceed that? Did book two exceed it? Is it just a back-to-back 5-star for you?
No. I rate this one slightly lower.
Really?
Yeah, ever so slightly.
What's your Rambler rating? What's your overall spoiler-free Rambler rating?
Spoiler-free, a 4.5. Spectacular book.
Wow.
But I still, for a couple reasons, yeah, you can go ahead and watch the video about it, but I like the first one more.
We'll dive into it here because I think we both had a half-point rating drop. Yours went from 5 to 4.5. My Blade itself was 4.25. This one, I give a 3.75. Real good book.
That's real low for you.
That's high and low. It's I like the book quite a bit. Quite a bit.
All right.
I think we are the odd ones out because people watching right now, most of you who have maybe read the book already, tend to like the books better as they go on. They go, book one is the worst, then book two, then book three is the best. It, typically what I see in the fandom.
Also, I understand completely why people would think that.
Yeah.
The biggest thing off the bat, non-spoiler-wise, is just structure. This book is far more understandable structure, standard plot. So where people go, oh, yeah, the first book doesn't have plot. Second book actually is a real plot. I get what they mean.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree again. Watch the video if you want, but still.
I disagree. Watch that video, yeah. But with this one, so apparently book three is typically the best of the series, but a lot of people watching, just to give some background of what others think, I posted my review on Instagram. If you guys want to follow us there, also check out our Patreon description below for our book club stuff, all that. Yeah, you know, guys, we plug stuff, whatever.
We sell ourselves and things.
Many things.
Ourselves being our time and effort, not our bodies. Not yet. Two to feet coming at one point.
Every live stream they do have us show our feet, so yeah, it's not beneath us. But not it completely. Literally is beneath us.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a thing.
So
on to the books.
I posted for my spoiler-free review of this. I will quote myself. Okay.
Do you think you're really deserving of quoting yourself?
No, but here I go. Okay, so this is my review on Instagram. Okay. Solid book, but got to say, wasn't wowed by it. Say one thing about Austin when he's in a bad mood. Say he says Before They Are Hanged is a knockoff A Song of Ice and Fire without a compelling plot. Say one thing about Austin when he's in a good mood. Say he says Before They Are Hanged has amazing characters and he doesn't really care what they're doing because it's just entertaining and awesome. 3.75 out of 5 stars. You have to be realistic about these things.
The outrage. The audacity. The uproar.
It wasn't just you. Our Instagram comments. Some of the peons out there, what some of them said, some in agreement, some in disagreement. Actually, it's funny. Vera on our Patreon rejoined the Patreon because she got rage baited by me. I posted that. She got so angry at that review, she joined the Patreon and said, Austin, what are you doing? Explain yourself. Which we then have a conversation. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But so some of the comments here, we have, I'm trying to read my, not my own, but the screenshot here. So real recognized reviews on Instagram says, Before They Are Hanged has a divisive ending among fans, but I ended up loving it because the way it subverts your expectations of of typical fantasy tropes, which we'll talk, I'm not going to say what that ending is since we're spoiler free. And then we had a couple of other people saying similar things here. Some saying, Austin, you're dumb. Okay, I made that one up. But we have Ryan
Why
drinks
would they make
beer.
That up? Why would you need to make that up? I'm sure it's there.
No, it's there plenty of times. Ryan Drinks Beer on Instagram said, I felt a little uneasy about the ending. I jumped right into book three and it was much faster paced and I loved it. So a lot of the comments here were about the ending of the book, which I guess we'll talk a lot about.
It's one of my favorite parts of it.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about it. So yeah. That's what some of the consensus is about this is generally speaking, I think if you look on Goodreads and TV will say they like book two better. However, it looks like both of us were lower. We'll dive into that. But still, before going into spoilers, both recommend.
Oh,
continuing on.
Definitely recommend the book.
Yeah.
Gotta read it. First Law is one of those big fantasy series. If you want to get into the modern fantasy genre, especially if you're going for, you know, grimdark stuff, this is what most people, I guess, the entry level grimdark fantasy.
I guess
maybe
so.
Not entry, but it's just
it's a good way to
it's the
get
standard.
In there. Yeah.
It's just generally considered one of those like, oh, you like grimdark fantasy? Joe Abercrombie.
Mm-hmm.
You should read it. So
and just like book one, I think the best things this does, characters and prose. I think consistent with that, would you agree those are the two stand out?
According to my rating here,
yes.
Yeah, characters and pros.
Oh, we're on the same page. So it continues to do that, but without further ado, spoiler time.
Yep.
Spoiler warning. You've been warned. We're talking about Before They Are Hanged, book two of the First Law trilogy. Come join us. Sit down. Relax. Join in for the conversation. Rich, you ready?
Yep.
Emotional impact. What'd you give it out of 5 stars?
I give it 4.5.
Spectacular.
Spectacular emotional impact, specifically because of couple key moments. The characters themselves were drawing me in for the emotional reactions.
Fantastic.
The ties, the what ifs. That there's a lot of what ifs in this book, and that just tearing my heart in two.
Yes.
So, and definitely some great surprise moments, like some twists and turns. I thought it was spectacular.
I gave it 3.75. Thought it was very good, so it matches with my overall score as well. What was that moment you're talking about there? The surprise moments, ones that got you going, holy crap.
Some of the best ones would definitely be Colum West killing Prince Ladislar. Just kills him outright. And it's like, what? Lovely. One, so cathartic of a moment of this goddamn prince who's just ruining everything and caused thousands of his soldiers to die. That was such a surprising moment for, I thought an emotional moment for me was, it definitely pulls on the emotional strings of, I liked Colum West suffering in the love triangle between, not even really a love triangle, I would say, but between
Cattle.
Between Cathal,
yeah, Cathal, yeah.
Dogman and him. Oof. Mm. I felt it, just the more pain on Colum West of just, love it. Going further, all the what ifs between Logan Ninefingers and Pharaoh, loved it. I love their chemistry between it, or maybe lack thereof, but just somehow there's something there. They bring out some of the best in each other. It's enjoyable. Everything to do with
Glockta.
That's the thing. I liked Glockta a lot. Liked him. He's my least favorite in this book.
Oh. Who's your favorite?
Giselle.
Okay.
Giselle was, I was most, mm-hmm. in terms of emotional investment.
Yeah.
Like, as characters, which one's the best character? Maybe there's a different question.
Okay.
Emotional investment, I was behind Luthar. It was so enjoyable for him to go from my least favorite character, I wanted to fail, to, oh my God, there's hope. Oh my God, he's actually become, like, is he going to become a real upstanding man and become a good person?
Yeah.
Is he going to learn humility and temperance?
Yeah, you could learn a thing or two, right?
Yeah. I loved it.
That's
I cool. loved his whole, and the budding friendship and respect between him and Logan.
Mm.
So great to see.
Yeah.
So invested with him.
So a lot of it had to do with your characters and how much you loved following them and just those emotional beats, because a lot of the, every character you mentioned at the beginning, every character kind of had a relationship type thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
Glockta's can't be sexual, but his was also maybe, whatever it was to Glockta, he lets Ida go out of everybody. He has some sort of respect in a way, yeah.
He has respect and mercy for desperate women.
And then you have Logan and Pharaoh, and you have Giselle, Dogman, West, and Cathal, and Giselle thinking back to Audie.
Artie,
yes, thank you. And so all of them having their little love B, C, D stories while they're having the North, the South, and we're in the West of the all around the Union. They're all going on their different adventures.
You also even have Baez with both of his former lovers talked about in this book.
Yes, indeed. And I think emotionally overall, this book's still going for that action and keeping you engaged with just
a mystery too.
The mystery as well. It's definitely there. I think the emotional beats for me hit good. I was enjoying it. I liked a lot. My favorite parts too are the smaller moments where the characters get to sit by a campfire, just those low moments. This whole book's a fellowship. We're going fellowship. They're going on different journeys. And I just got to appreciate, since book one was setting up, putting them all together in one spot, seeing them interact. I could watch them drink tea all day, 24 hours, and then I would enjoy my time there. to bring the negatives. Now, the thing that you loved about Giselle, we'll get more into characters, I'm sure. The thing you loved about Giselle and the things that Glockta did in this book, and a lot of it, I think, was more of a tempered, I was more tempered in my emotional outburst because of perspective and just different stories I've experienced, where when I was reading some story like that with Giselle, I couldn't stop thinking like Jaime Lannister. And what's that look?
Raffo.
Great. I can't wait. But I was thinking when I was reading this book to Giselle and seeing Jaime come out as well, not to spoil Game of Thrones for anybody, but just the scene where Giselle is scarred now and his personality changing, you start to root for him, or the scenes with Glockta being in charge of the city now and being kind of your quote unquote, the people look down on because he's crippled or like Tyrion's deformed, and just the overall grim, dark nature to me was packaged in a real good way. I love how Joe Abercrombie does this. To me, I was just kind of in my head going, oh, okay, I see what's happening here. I think my emotional investment, that's not to say that it was poorly done here. My emotional investment was tempered because I was thinking, okay, I've seen this and I think George did it better. That's my hot take. I will say too, Joe Abercrombie himself, like, he'll joke around and talk about how he's like a ripoff of Game of Thrones, which it's not a ripoff of Game of Thrones. It's inspired and he has his own thing here. But just to give some background, here's a quote that Abercrombie says that I have some, this, I don't know where I got this from. Internet, it has to be real. But he says this: so there's an awful lot of different stuff in the pot, and I'm sure there is for every author, and most of it from outside the genre. But in terms of influences from written fantasy between 93 and 02, Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire in general, is definitely the outstanding, if not the only significant one. I doubt the First Law would look quite the way it does without having read those books. Hell, maybe I wouldn't have written it at all. So to show that, hey, I'm a huge Song of Ice, as in the show itself that I watched, I loved it up to a certain point until it got to the later seasons. So I love the grimdark aspects of this, and I'm looking for, I love the characters just as much, but I think the beats or the emotions, while I enjoyed my time a lot, it was a more personal problem of going, oh, I really like it. I really enjoy
it. You've just seen that before.
I think I just thought of it in a different way. Went, okay, I liked it better there. I still really liked it here. That's just where my emotion, it wasn't
the
floored.
Novelty wasn't there, so yeah. Your emotion wasn't high.
Yes, while saying that, had a kick-ass time, too. I really enjoyed, why was I emotionally pulled from The Blade itself more than this book? Because both of us had lower rankings. To explain mine, of hey, why was that first one better emotional pull for me? I feel like the first one had such a way of looking at the minutiae detail right from chapter one with Glockta going through stairs. Logan's introduction, I even loved falling off the precipice. I loved the small and really grueling ways that book one didn't have. I guess more stuff happened in this book, but in book one, for some reason, the berserk moment with Logan as well, and all of those scenes to me were just more fresh exciting.
It was surprising, all the little things that come together. Again,
the point
for me,
of views coming together was super cool.
The duel, yeah. Like the duel in the blade itself was a work of subtle plotting of all the little pieces put together. And when it comes together, it was so cathartic, even though it realistically kind of small. It was just a duel. Like he won a duel and then nothing really of consequence ultimately. Who really cares if Giselle won or lost? The plot would still mostly go on.
Right.
But it was significant for us. Versus this one, you compare a lot of these big events, like a lot of more impactful things happen, but they're less subtle about it. So it's just like, okay, yeah, standard story.
Mm-hmm.
Big thing happens.
And not that those action scenes and that the grueling thing I'm trying to get out is I can think back to book one, the descriptions of the stairs, the descriptions of torture, the descriptions of Logan's inner monologue still is in this book. But when I point to this book, my favorite most emotional scene to me was when Logan and Farrell were hanging off the edge and off going toward the cliff. And I just remember the way this scene was described and something about the, it's not that I didn't see that they were going to fall or something, because it didn't shock me that that happened, but all the best emotional moments in this book are where the big action happens and the characters kind of just go wild. And, you know, Pharaoh's now clinging on to Logan, who's clinging on to this. They end up failing. A lot of this book is about failure in the end. And
Yeah.
Was there a scene for an action scene for you? Logan's moment in the scene, was that a big one for you?
That's the thing is, now that you expect the Bloody Nine to come out, it's not it's still kick ass. It's awesome when he goes against all the Shanka. Like how it's described is wonderful. I loved it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't hit the same as one of the final chapters in The Blade itself. That came as a complete out of nowhere left field surprise. It took all of your expectations and went, yeah, you know, we set up the whole book of everyone is terrified of the monster of the Bloody Nine. And then you get to follow Logan and go, okay, yeah, I get why he would maybe be considered a monster. He's a really great fighter. But I don't see this kind of careful, thoughtful, wise old man talking, not even old man, but wise, grizzled fighter.
Right.
Being a real monster. He's a complicated individual. And then last chapter, and oh no, he's actually a monster. He's a literal demon in a man's skin. So that emotion and raw, how jarring it is.
Yeah.
And this time it's more Logan feels it coming on and he pushes Pharaoh to the side and like, get behind me. I can't control myself. I gotta kill me some Shanka. So it's in the moment, it's well written, well described, but it doesn't come as a surprise like it did in the first book.
Then maybe we're on the same page of that. I still emotionally pulled. Obviously, you were too.
I loved it.
I guess when I'm comparing to the prior one, I guess it did more of the same, which is good. It did more of the same, but didn't up it. If that makes sense. So with that Logan scene, the first Berserk scene was more surprising. The first Berserk scene was more out of nowhere. With this one, I guess maybe I would have been more invested in that Berserk scene, or it would have been crazier to happen if it was for chapters. Maybe that's the wrong way of putting it.
The first one, it saved his butt. The thing is, what is the consequence? He can't control himself. Mm-hmm. In this one, it's kind of a similar thing. We get a tease of he almost attacks, like it hurts Pharaoh.
Yeah.
But doesn't. So like, that's the thing. It's a similar, the consequences need to be raised of him going into his berserker mode. So.
I will say those smaller moments, the things I'm thinking about in this book that pulled me, I don't want to jump the gun, but I just have to mention it too. Giselle, who's one of my favorites in this too. So while I was saying, hey, I looked at Game of Thrones and I think I liked that better when it came to some of these beats, is not to diminish the fact that someone like Giselle, where his inner monologue throughout some of the scenes before he's going into battle, thinking to himself, oh, he kind of is a coward. Oh, I actually am feared for, I've dueled, but now he's out in the real world and learning the quick lesson, even before he's scarred, is quickly coming to realize after being taught by Logan a little bit of, hey, here's how you actually fight. And Giselle's response to when push comes to shove is, oh, I'm not made up for this. This is not good at all. I miss already. I wish I could go back right now. And who cares that I would marry somebody below my rank in elitism. It doesn't matter. And that fear that came out from him, you start to go, okay, he's going through it. But
also there's a good moment there where he's not just a coward in dead weight. When he actually takes on
those, he kills a couple of them.
And easily, really easily. It's it's showing that, no, he's not incompetent. He has some things to get over, but if he can get over his fear, he actually would be a very feared warrior. He's not...
Right.
He's not completely useless as a fighter. I think that it's a cool balance of interesting of even Logan was impressed of going, wow, those people were diced. You got them clean. If only you could pay attention to what's coming up behind you, but whatever.
And now he's left with his completely scarred face. And I think that's the one he cares about the most other than the rest of his body, because his beautiful face.
His beautiful face. His most favorite hobby is looking at himself in the mirror.
Do you want to go on to thought-provokingness? Because a lot of the character stuff we'll get to.
Emotional moments. Were there any... We talked about Logan and all them a lot. Was there anything with Three Trees and the Dogman?
Oh, that was a good mention. Actually, the Dogman controversially was my least favorite part of the book.
that whole section generally,
oh,
along
agree?
With Marshall Burr.
Yeah.
I disagree.
Oh, okay. Okay, you disagree. Then, yeah. Then what did you like about it? I thought you made the agree face and it switched on me.
Oh, no. No, I just wanted to know what your thoughts were emotional. What pulled you emotionally from it? Because I really enjoyed the incompetence of the Union and the meritocracy of the North.
Mm-hmm.
And just how all those interactions, how they're going about, the emotional moments pulling me from, like, maybe not the Dogman himself. Like, I enjoy him as a good vehicle for the story.
Yeah.
He's a great little narrator right now. But him himself is not as interesting as some of the others were. West. Colin West is a great character. I really enjoyed following him.
His point of view, yeah.
So things like that were much more enjoyable to me. My least favorite being Gloctus.
Point of view.
Even though I liked it a lot. So it's like, the best of the worst, best to worst of the best.
Great. Yeah, with the, I think the Dogman for me. Do you want to wait to characters to dive into them? So we'll talk about Dogman, but let's go to thought provokingness for what'd you give that out of 5 stars?
4.25. Thought it was really great.
I gave it 3.5. Good.
I think
what message for you?
There's a couple.
Yeah.
Everything with Logan is gold. The amount of wise lessons from Logan, I think, were just.
Which was your favorite of them?
I think it's probably tied between the. There's the actual lessons he's trying to teach Giselle of the three things, three lessons to learn is always be. Always look less intimidating than you actually are. And then what were the three? It's less look
less intimidating, be as skillful as you can, prepare,
and then lastly was when you make a decision, don't second guess yourself.
Right.
Because there's like once you commit, you commit 100%. And then lastly.
And then the other half of it's luck.
Yeah. There's that. And what I enjoyed most from him is how he builds camaraderie with his groups. And I guess it is simple, but I loved how.
No, that was my favorite part of it too. The one small gesture at a time gets you.
It's an analytical way of looking. It's an analytical and cynical way at looking at groups and team leadership. If he's done this kind of stuff before with brand new people, he just knows, like, hey, even if people all hate each other, I'm going to do one nice thing. And has enough patience to, he knows it. That one nice gesture is not going to work, but just going to keep doing it. And the thing is, he's right. He gets them all to actually come together to some degree.
Right.
He charms Pharaoh. That's a Herculean effort. That's the most impressive thing Logan Nine Fingers has ever done.
Charmed the beast.
Charmed the beast of the Gurkish.
Yeah. That one small gesture at a time, that kind of leadership that he says in his inner monologue and shows that it works. Good message. I mean, it also shows in that fellowship of bastards, I like to call this one, you know, just a bunch of bastards coming together. And usually in your fellowship, you have some people that are disgruntled going back and forth, and they eventually come together with some trauma bond. Something happens, which Logan's, of course, him and Pharaoh have something happen at trauma bonds, but from the get-go is just saying, hey, I've done this before. This is how it's done. And that it rings true for life. You can think, hey, I've seen this advice out there that when you go into a networking event or something of the sort, don't ever ask people for something. You give and provide as much as you can, and even do something that they don't ask for, because then intrinsically human psyche goes, oh, now I owe them something.
Yeah,
you automatically. I don't. I'll tell you personally. I don't like to. When someone does something for me, of course I like it. But when someone does something for me, I feel, oh damn it! Now I got to do twice as good. If you ever feel that way, if someone does something for you and you just feel like, oh, now I'm indebted. Damn it!
It's a similar feeling of when you've met someone before, you meet again, and they remember your name. And you don't. And you're like,
oh, I'm such a shitty person.
Oh, I'm terrible.
Oh.
I now actually have, it's like, I'm going to remember your name twice as hard now. I'm going to study this in the bathroom. Just write it over and over.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible. So that message, and then another one, the theme we brushed on a little bit, that that this whole novel, I think, is the main theme. The cycle of failure.
Yeah.
The comes back to where we started, baby.
Yeah.
And in most of the plot lines, Baez and the Seed, nope, not there. Dalgoska, nope, it's gone. The North, it's okay. So,
well, no, we end, okay, with Logan and the crew, Baez and the crew.
Yep.
Beginning of the book, they're going off to find the Seed. Mm-hmm. That's the journey. The end of the story with, they came back to the city, they can't find the Seed.
Well, what you gonna do?
And we're back at square one. Then we have Dagoska, and, you know, we have a...
yeah.
Help me out.
The North?
No.
England?
No. Nope. Talking
Dagoska, the Gurkish down there?
Character. Glockta.
Oh, Glockta. I thought you were looking for place. Person
blanket. My brain's not working so good right now. Anyway.
So Glockta, yeah.
Glockta. He, at the beginning of the book, he leaves, becomes leader of Dagoska.
Yep.
And, he, you know, it ends the book of Dagoska's fallen. He's back in the city. Not much has changed.
No, not just that. Solving a murder mystery in Dagoska now has to solve a murder mystery in the Union.
Yeah.
Wait, we just
and
did this.
And ultimately found, like, what was it all for? I got some political points from it. Like, I gained a couple votes. It's
couple
like,
favors. Yep.
Glock is like that. Oh, that seemed needlessly expensive of human lives for a very small payout. But okay, we'll keep going.
Yeah.
And then the North is started with a big loss. Or kind of at the end of the book of like, hey, the Northmen's kind of kicking the Union's ass. And then what do we end up with at the end of the book? Like, still kind of kicking the Union's ass, but not completely.
It's mm-hmm.
like, it still marches on. Nothing changed.
No, no.
But a lot has changed. That's the thing. Is A, plot-wise,
mm-hmm.
sure, not really a lot has changed, but a lot of the characters have changed.
Exactly, yeah.
And the circumstances, the setup for more has happened. So that's the fun thing, is it subverted your expectations in the sense of, oh, we feel like we're spinning our wheels and everything was a failure.
Mm-hmm.
But there's other things to come. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to up to a 3.75. I just really like that, the whole cycle thing. I like the concept of that. I like it. I'm up in mind by 0.25. There we go.
Good.
Did you have something else on the message themes that we didn't touch on?
Oh, I mean, I think each section of the story had different stuff to deal with. So Glockta dealing with the nature of what loyalty is and like the purpose of why you fight. It was so interesting of him realizing he was fighting a losing battle
mm-hmm.
that ultimately made no difference, and that he turned away a peace deal where they could abandon the city and ultimately save a lot more lives.
Right.
And at the end of the day, he bought some more time, and it didn't matter at all. It just cost.
Even at the end,
lives.
the Gurkish offer, hey, just take this prize, and we're not going to send anything in it, but it'll look like we gave you something.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, we'll acquiesce. I guess it just ends in such a...
And ultimately, he punished the woman who actually was trying to do something for the city. Like, Ida. Ida actually, mm-hmm. She found a way to negotiate and got a decent deal with the Gurkish. And... she's the one that gets punished. I mean, Glockta does give her mercy and sets her free at his own.
He kills Verms, I believe, the other guy. So.
But lets her go.
Yeah.
So the one
sort
of nice thing he did after torturing her. So
definitely real good themes. I liked it better than Blade itself in that way. That there, it seemed like there was more to unpack in this one.
Then we have Wes on his... what is his nickname now? It's
Furious. Yeah,
just this vengeful, which is weird. He's an angry guy.
But then you have Pharaoh.
And you have all these others, and it's curious. Why is he furious? Yeah.
We saw a glimpse of that in Blade itself.
we see glimpses of it,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like it's deep. Mm-hmm. It's deep down. It's not shown as often as something like Pharaoh or
he tries
Logan.
To hide it, but maybe that's who he truly is.
Yeah, it's yeah. Who does he fit in? He's trying to be a good man, but he's ultimately like everyone else in this story, which is pretty awful people.
Yeah.
So
somehow we root for them, though. That's yeah. the thing. Let's go characters then and talk about
fair
these characters.
Enough, I think we should.
What'd you give characters out of 5 stars?
4.75.
Fantastic for you.
Super spectacular.
I gave 4.5 stars. Spectacular.
Fair enough.
Spectacular.
Yeah.
And where did we start? Where do you want to start?
My God, let's start with some of the rapid fire, quicker ones then.
Yeah.
Would that be? Smaller characters surrounding them. Like, talk about Carta then Ida, or what's her first name?
Ida?
I know, but.
Yeah. Oh, I just remember her as Ida. Yeah.
Ida. Fair enough.
Ida, yeah.
I thought she was a really great character that. Great bouncing off with Glockta of shy away from his scars, respected him. They had such playful banter between each other.
Yeah.
Her being kind of a selfish nature, she's opulent, but when you're first introduced to her, you see the opulence that she has, but ultimately she had the best intentions for the people there. She had it's partly selfish, but also she had a modicum amount of decency to not want everyone in the city to die. And so she was willing to sell out the union, which has done nothing for them. So, yeah, no, she was a really fun character to bounce off of. What did you think?
Ida?
Yeah.
She wasn't standout, but yeah, fun one to bounce off of, I would say. So I think I liked Glockta more than you in this book, it sounds like, or maybe the things happening around Glockta. Glockta, yeah, you got a thought there?
Character we haven't talked about at all.
Who?
That I think we should.
We'll talk about it. Well, who is it?
The mercenary. The famous. What is his? Oh, help. Name. Hurts. Brain.
I got you.
It's
Here
been
we
too
go.
Long since
Google
I've
will
read
be
this
faster
book.
Than book.
Will it?
Yes. I got you right here. Boom.
I don't think you have it. I bet you don't.
Koska.
Koska.
Yeah.
Nikoma Koska.
Yes, Koska.
I love that character. Oh, he was so much fun. Just this wild drunk that was somehow so competent. He was the Jackie Chan. You know the Jackie Chan character who's like drunken fist? He does kung fu because he's drunk?
Oh, I follow you, yeah.
That's this character, but with military mind.
And just takes the largest bribe.
Takes the largest bribe, always comes out ahead, somehow drunkenly moves his way to success every time. Yeah. And he always
he
wins.
Because
he always takes the winning side.
He was the best side piece in that whole Dagestan area. Dagoska area. He was the best besides Glockta for me. Glockta, did you not? Why didn't you like Glockta as much? This booker still loves Glockta.
I still loved Glockta. Oh, okay. I just didn't like him. Like, if I had to rank all of them,
yeah,
all three perspectives, I liked Glockta's the least.
There's more perspectives, but you're saying you're Logan, West, Glockta? You're talking about the main three?
Like the main three. Like, just not as interested as others.
Okay.
But
was it because of something different from last book? Because last book, was Logan your favorite last book or Glockta your favorite last book?
Glockta was my favorite last book. Tied with Logan, really.
What missed here for Glockta?
I think all the other characters had some really great personable moments where with Glockta, it was far more tied with the mystery. And the mystery is interesting. The plot was interesting to find out of like, who's the traitor? What's going on?
Okay.
But Glockta himself, fairly stagnant, a little bit tested, but not as much as some of the other characters. So I wasn't as invested.
I get you.
You go what I mean?
I get you.
The plot was more
interesting,
but the character himself didn't go through. The other side, it's fun seeing Glockta succeed.
I'll defend this because maybe you're feeling the quote-unquote middle book syndrome of Glockta, you know, going through first book, you get introduced to Glockta's personality, you're going, holy crap, an inquisitor who tortures. Where is this going? And just the weird psychology of, why do I do this? Why do I do this? And there's more of that in this. I think to refresh you on some of these smaller parts too with Glockta, what kind of came out in Glockta's character was when defending the city, Okay, two key scenes, I think, in this. One, defending the city, every constant motivation to preserve the city. Glockta was doing the morally right thing for the morally wrong reason, as in he's protecting the city because he wants to save his own ass. He's saying, why are you trying to kill these people? We need to question them. He's a torturer, but he's going, don't just needlessly kill these people. They information we need from them. So every constant thing he does, he somehow almost does a good thing in the long run, saving people and looking up after, I know the
natives.
The like natives, respect, yes.
Yeah.
He's doing that, not because he cares about the natives, but he cares about himself. And so he's selfishly utilitarian somehow. And then another scene that shows that at the very end, which I pulled me and went, okay, I understand Glockta so well. At the end where the prince dies and we get revealed by the banking guild, the bankers, and it's very clear that the prince wasn't killed by this person. This person who was blamed for killing the prince was not the actual killer. Mm-hmm. It's very obvious. It's just, hey, this person, yeah. Glockta says it to us, and we just know this is not the killer whatsoever. And what I loved about Glockta's thought process there is Glockta, from the get-go, is like, oh, I have no qualms with us killing an innocent man. I have qualms that they think they're duping me. Like, essentially just going, but I don't, he doesn't like how he feels because, no, I'm smarter than this. And just the way of that he processes the death of the innocent man is what you should be angry at, but he's going, no, not that.
Yeah.
I can't be duped. This is unfair.
Well, so, the one thing about him that is, it's the one thing that's admirable about Glockta,
yeah,
truly, is his desire for the truth. That he, even if he, what he does with it he's is inquisitor. Beside the point.
Yep.
He wants to know what the truth is, no matter what it is. He will.
Yes.
He is a dog without the bone. He needs to know the truth.
Yes.
Even if it's inconvenient, even if it, to some degree, even at his own personal cost and his personal life. Like he, when Valentin Bulk says, stop that investigation right now. And he goes, what'll happen if I don't? Like he pushes him, going like, no, I want to know. I want to know what, I want to find out who the real killer is. It's like, shut up. You're owned now.
Yeah.
How much he pushes that. And even in Dagoska, he wants to know the truth. Who is a traitor?
Who actually did this? Like, yeah.
Why is this happening? His desire for the truth is kind of above everything else.
Yes.
What he does with it is beside the point. Mm-hmm. He may lie, he may cheat, who knows?
Right.
I think also another thing is how much he says, like, how much he's in pain, how much he's like, why do I keep doing this? And the more, like, why do I even try?
Right.
The kind of the self-deprecating of, like, why go on? Why I should just kind of give up.
Why do this? Yeah.
And yet he fights tooth and nail. Every squirt, like, he is the scrappy survivor at heart. He will never give up, which is interesting. Like, he's just so determined to win.
Yeah.
He's
a cockroach.
Like, yeah, well, thing is, if he's ever going to go out, he wants to go out on his own terms. He's not willing to let someone else beat him. That's ultimately, his character comes down to, he's a winner, and he hates to lose.
But he constantly accepts he could lose at any moment. He's being called into a room by Salt,
he's like,
and he just thinks, oh.
Another body floating down the river.
Yeah. Yep.
Another unidentified body floating down.
He constantly accepts this could happen at any moment, but he just refuses to give in.
Yeah. Makes super him cool. Fun to follow. Like,
exactly.
That's,
so I still love, I think Glockta's still my favorite point of view character. Just continues from book one. Like, Glockta's just doing it for me. Where Logan, how do you like Logan this book?
Oh, loved Logan. Other than the Bloody Nine scene not being as fun for me as the reveal in the end of the first book.
Yep.
Other than that, we just got more of what I loved about Logan. Of him being a really competent leader, passing on his work with Giselle. I loved everything.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase.
Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax Live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Doing with Pharaoh, his inner monologue of how he takes leadership, all of that wonderful. And the fight scenes are always great.
And then when you have him and Pharaoh together, how do you like the tension between them after the sex?
It was funny. Yeah. It was really funny. I'm just, it's frustrating, but understandable. Both of the characters just cannot communicate, mainly Pharaoh.
I gotta say, Pharaoh increased this book big time for me compared to book one.
Oh yeah,
and the biggest way Pharaoh increased was from the scene where she asks Logan, "Fuck, let's fuck right now." Even that moment makes me think about her character and her upbringing. Her when she grew up, she used that as a currency.
Well, also when she felt like, "Oh, I owe you a debt. Exactly, and I just want to pay it off."
Her way of owing was, "Oh, this is something I provide." This is how she was used or handled things in the past. And so her saying that so bluntly, it looked so nonchalant as just she looks at sex in a way mm-hmm. that her character exactly fits. Of course, Pharaoh would look at it that way. You have a thought there?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, yeah. It's of course. But it's not her sense of, oh, I'm going to do something good for him. It's not even that. She feels uncomfortable just letting a moment pass where she owes someone else.
That theme we're talking about with Logan, the small gestures, you don't want to feel owed. And so her way of that currency to her is, oh, well, sex. Now I don't owe you anything.
Yeah.
It's just the way she looks at that. Mm-hmm. Oh, very neat. Is there something else about her character too? Just
everything. Her? You get more about her history of her describing what happened to her. Do we get that in the first book of her taking a knife to her own skin?
In Blade itself?
In Blade itself. Do we get that? Or is that only in this book?
Ooh. Maybe just this book? I can't remember.
I thought it was just sitting around the campfire, all of them talk about scars, and her going like, yeah,
that's just this book. Okay. I think, yeah.
But I was raised to be a whore, and the one thing I could do to hurt the man who bought me was damage his bought goods, and so took a knife to myself to the bone. Scars that you couldn't heal. It's like, oh, she's hard. Oh boy, she's savage.
Yeah.
She's a savage character, and you love her for it. Just like
Logan and Pharaoh are meant for each other, essentially. You know,
yeah, they are.
What did you think about West and Giselle? And that actually, I'm jumping to two different characters in two different plot lines. What did you think of Giselle since we're sticking with the Logan and Pharaoh group fellowship?
Arguably my favorite, or maybe close to either my favorite, but my biggest improvement of I love the roller coaster of emotion of hating him book one and loving to see him fail to wanting him to improve. It's an enjoyable ride of redemption. Or potential redemption, seeing where you're so close. You have potential, Giselle.
Yes.
But Abercrombie's hurt me before.
Giselle's fantastic as well and continues to be fantastic. West.
West is just an enjoyable point of view. Mainly, so West himself is an enjoyable character. On his own, the filtering of rage, regret, everything he's done, like the fact that he beat his sister is still in his mind in this book.
That's still my favorite moment for him of the two books. I think he shined in that. The bad,
also,
bad
also
action,
him
but...
killing the prince, Ladislaw, is just cold. Like, not even in a fit of rage. It's rage beyond, it's off the tipping
The way
point.
That was described from Prince Ladislaw, too, that he grinned like a schoolboy being caught doing something naughty just for trying to rape somebody was just showed you how demented Prince Ladislaw was, where of all these characters, Glockta tortures people. We follow all of them, but the prince, irredeemable. And you just, when he dies, there's...
That's the thing is everyone else, all of our other main characters acknowledge they're not good people.
The prince grins like a schoolboy, like, oh, I did a naughty... He doesn't acknowledge what he's doing is awful.
Which... thing is, first book, that was a little bit of Giselle. Like, Giselle didn't see how much of a pussy he is. He doesn't see how much of a coward he is and how all of his negative qualities, he sees himself as a really righteous person. In this book, he acknowledged going like, man, I've been a terrible friend. And look at all these people who've done every kindness to me and I treat them with scorn. And look at Logan, this respectable guy who's saved my butt, and he's been treating me with respect, kindness, and wisdom that I need, and patience, and how badly I've looked down on him. And he's a much more respectable man than me. And that's what makes you like him a bit more.
And the genius with Abercrombie's characters, I think, with the prince versus with Giselle, is if Giselle did something in book one that made him irredeemable to the reader, you can't redeem him then. You can't have the scene in book two where you start to root for him and you go, oh man, he could overcome this. Where there's some line, whatever the line Abercrombie figured out, to where you make your character acknowledge what they're doing is bad, or constant actions that are both morally gray enough that they don't cross the line the prince did. They don't cross a line for the reader to go, them off.
Glockta's like shaving body parts off people.
Did
and
it cross the line?
Innocent people.
Question: did it cross the line for you?
Somehow, no. I don't
exactly
know why.
The point where he's doing awful things, but at the same time, we're going, he's gonna grow. He's cute little Glockta. He's, you know, everyone has that phase in their 20s. In their 40s, whatever.
You know, he's only human after all.
So I don't know how he does it, but that's the constant. That's the constant the joy I get from reading these characters.
I think a lot of it is, it's the reason behind why they do things.
Yes.
So ultimately, in the world of, like, in the First Law world, it's a dark, grim place where terrible things have to happen. Terrible things happen to everyone, and it's a dark place. Oh. So the people that are doing dark things, to some degree, is understandable, acceptable, especially like Glockta is, he's just a realist. He's doing things to accomplish a goal, good or bad. Like, he's trying to save his own skin. Sometimes he tries to help out someone else, but he's trying to survive in the grim world. But he doesn't take pleasure in doing terrible things. He knows it's not a good thing. He's just making the choice. With the Prince Ladislaw, it comes out of this youthful joy and just sick twistedness where you go, no, you don't even see what you're doing is bad. That's what's wrong about it. Same thing with West beating his sister. In the moment, it's just out of rage. It's not for anything. That his senseless violence toward his sister is just rage and pointless and ultimately served no end. And he regrets it. It's pointless violence that is the more regrettable thing in this world.
Right.
So that's why Glockta can do all these terrible things, but at least it's for something.
When we're talking about a moral good person, usually I think the three words we get out of ourselves is your intent, consent with the other person. What are you doing to the other person? Is it consensual? And lastly, well-being. Those three seem to cover when we talk about, hey, this is what you're doing is right, what you're doing is wrong. every argument someone will say for something's right, someone's wrong, they'll say something like, hey, my intention was good. Or like, hey, do you allow me to do this? When we're talking about things like euthanasia, the debate around euthanasia is, can you do it with someone's consent? Then the debate will also be, is it for their well-being? And all these questions being had. Mm-hmm. And Abercrombie seems to look at, regardless of what the consent is, Glock is not consenting to, oh, can I torture you now? And it's not good for their well-being either. So yeah. It comes down to those other factors, although are immoral. You're not, those both spectrums are immoral, but then intent-wise of what is your self-reflection out of on it? What is your reasoning? And that's what Abercrombie focuses on. The internal motivation, your intent behind your heart, which a lot of their intentions are even met. So it's confusing, but the intent makes us still care about them.
Yeah.
For some reason, he does it well.
I think the reason why the Bloody Nine is so fearful is it's senseless violence. It's just violence for the pleasure of it.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a through line of what is wrong when characters take pleasure in violence, in brutality. That's where it's wrong. Black Dow is as violent as everyone else, but he takes pleasure in killing. And that's where even the Dogman's like going, Black Dow's a bad guy, and we're all bad guys. That seems to be the line in this world of what makes you just another bad person in a bad world versus an evil person in this world is, I think, taking pleasure in the misery of others.
Yeah. And mentioning, we have a couple other characters here, Baez, mm-hmm. Kwai, that group over there, and Dogman, as you mentioned as well, that whole group. I'll say I can't give a reason why other than it was the least interesting to me. I could try to give a reason why. Maybe that's a bad thing in an hour-long podcast.
You should probably enunciate, right? Yeah, probably.
But Dogman was my least favorite. Mm-hmm. That whole group, I think I'll be more invested if Logan gets involved with them and there's a little reunion. I think book three, it's set up to happen. We'll see. But with Dogman and the whole crew, I see them as a unit. Something didn't click with me with the Dogman and them.
Do you feel for Three Trees' death? I felt a little something. I felt bad when he died. He was a good guy.
Yeah.
He was the best Northman.
He was cool.
He actually had honor.
Yeah.
Of all the characters, he actually probably had the best character. Best moral character.
Mm. Yeah.
He stood up for what was right. Actually would sacrifice himself for the good of others.
You're right. I think he is the best of them.
And he's dead. He's dead. But no, he went across the entire North going like, no, we got to warn, like, I know the Union, they suck, but we got to warn them about Bethod. Like, he could just fuck off, but tries to do what's right and stands up for others. And he dies. Back to the mud.
Back to the mud.
Yes. I love that phrase of it. Oof.
I think the thing with the Northmen are that still fine characters, but with Dogmen and that crew, it's just a less interesting version of Logan. No, they don't have the berserk stuff. It's just I'm going, oh yeah, Logan's got all this stuff going on. And his crew, there's a reason they were never in command of the group. Logan's their leader. But they're having their journey on their own that was just, I connected less with the character, I guess. Whereas with Logan's character and when they get together, I'm curious to see if that my opinion changes there. But your opinion on Dogman, is there something that made you connect with them more than me?
It's mainly the story around the Dogman. It's not the Dogman himself.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed everything with Colonel West. I love the battles between just seeing how stupid the Union can be, and you see the difference between the meritocracy of the Northmen and just the stubborn nobility hierarchy with the Union.
Yeah.
And seeing how those clash of the, especially some key figures in the Union seem to be putting the worst people in. They're having more internal fights than external, and that they are ultimately the reason why they're going to lose is their own leadership. And they put the worst person in charge every time, and yet still fought, like Colonel West still follows him. And it's like Three Trees was asking, like, you know, your leader's an idiot and he got you all killed. Why are you still protecting him?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Ditch him. Like, when we find a leader that's going to get us all killed, we ditch the leader and we come up with someone better.
Yeah.
So I loved seeing that play off
each other. Practicality in that, yeah.
And just the fun, yeah. Bethod, all the twists and turns of, oh, the Shankar are here. What does that mean?
I can see you enjoying that. I guess Dogman wasn't one of your favorites either. Just him as a character. I get his character. More on one track than the others, but he's also not the main point of view character. So
But he's also tempered. It's enjoyable to see him of like a Northman who's not like we get a bunch of other characters that are just kind of crazy and like just kind of going insane, but the Dogman is pretty cautious.
Ironic, he's called literally a Dogman. And
It's fun being in his head of how does everyone else see him?
Sure.
How does he see himself? It's enjoyable.
And Bias. I think Bias took a little step down this book, I'll say. I love that book one. Again, some of the intros stick in my head so well. Mm. Or Bias, when Logan meets Bias and him just telling the king, princelings, whatever, to screw off. And something about that. But this book, he was very much you're not Gandalf, showing you throughout the world, throwing some information at you, still having his moments. But for him, did a scene stick out to you? I'm trying to see if there's a scene with Baez that just made me go, that's so Baez.
Several.
Which ones? Yeah, remind me.
It's seeing him kind of start to unfray. And
oh, that end scene?
It's even in the beginning. Yeah. Think about when he specifically praises, talking to Giselle, say like, hey, a great thing about Logan is he knows when to talk and he knows when to keep his trap shut.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows he has patience and what is the right word? Patience and fortitude. I don't know.
Okay.
Stoic. He's not pushed around by his emotions very often. Baez, when he's given the slightest bit of lip or disrespect, he goes off the rails a little bit. And just more and more where he's...
Well, off.
His anger is slipping out more and more often with other people where like, you could have just gone away with just moving on. But no, you had to make everything worse by blowing up. And
that all blows up in the end when he just says straight up to people when the seed turns out, seed's not there.
Yeah. So... I liked seeing him on Frey.
I guess we get
more details of him meeting his friends along the way. And every time they're like, hey, I'll help you. And then he just kind of dismisses them. And further we find out of, even his friends don't like him. His former lover results of like, hey, you got your previous lover killed. And just all this stuff around him. You see him in a worse and worse light.
Mm-hmm. I think the quirkiness from book one, he still has some of that too, but the thing that I guess we'll talk more in world, the thing that his reaction to that and the way he's unfurling and getting angrier, I guess I'm very disconnected from his backstory, just kind of going, I'm very uninterested. And so because it's based on he's the base of the story and his past and the fight against
Kha'Lul,
the fight against Kha'Lul, is his presence and what he was doing with the daughter and et cetera. So some of that will touch on world. However, I think that's my disconnect with some of Baez here, where a lot of his anger and that coming out there was from his backstory, and which we can explore.
Sure. I just like seeing it go from book one of ultimately
quirky,
something off, but ultimately seems like Baez is... on the side of good, relatively. Like, he's got plans, but it seems like he's trying to beat the bad guys.
Yeah.
And then now you're like, okay, what are you doing, Baez? Because this doesn't... Everyone seems to be against you, even your friends.
He needs a V8, you know?
What actually happened in your past? Because some stuff isn't lining up, and he's shushing people when they start to talk too much. So... anyway.
Want to go on the plot?
We can go on the plot.
What did you give plot out of 5 stars?
This is one I could be convinced to lower.
Interesting.
But I gave it a 4.5. I thought it was spectacular.
You gave the first book a 5-star plot.
Yes.
And this one a 4.5.
Yeah.
I'll accept that as wrong. 4.5 for you. This is where, the reason for my 3.75, it was going to start to come out in these next few categories where love the characters, real good theme and emotionally pulled. For this, I gave a 3.25.
Slightly disappointed.
No, no. It was slightly above average. 3.25. Yeah.
Got it.
Above average plot. Where I think the previous book I gave a 3, just neutral. This definitely had more of a plot there for me. Why did you say could be disappointed to go down? Are you feeling like you... There, you gave it such a high score, so is there something of that you loved about the plot?
Yeah.
And then what made you want to backtrack a little bit?
I love all the twists. The twists for me, I loved everything with Dagoska and how the traitor was found out. I love everything with that. It was so much fun. Mm-hmm. With Logan Ninefingers and the rest of the crew, I love the turning of its head of, look at this worthless journey. And just this, they did all this to go to the end of the world and the seed isn't there. Oh my God. What a kind of twist on the plot. I enjoyed the story along through it. I loved everything with the Dogman and Colin West. I enjoyed the plot and it was a really engaging plot for me. I enjoyed finding out what's going to happen next. Gotcha. So I thought it was pretty spectacular.
The people that hate the plot in this book hate the ending that all is all pointless.
Oh, I loved that.
People that love it like you are, oh, that's the point of it. Yeah. Or that's the point of the book. That's why it's so cool, right?
Yeah.
I'm somewhere in between. I'm gonna be fickle. I'm not on either end of the teeter totter. I'm in the dead center of the teeter totter.
You're teeter tottering.
I'm right there, and if you know you're sitting on one side, and you're my only friend. I don't know who's sitting on the other. So I'm right there where the different plots going on. We have Glockta with a murder mystery, just to give the premise here. So murder mystery, the why done it. If we were looking at our 10 types of stories, where only 10 stories exist, the why done it. We have our Logan and gang with Baez, the Golden Fleece story. Where
your fellowship.
Yeah, Golden Fleece. Golden Fleece is the fellowship, where it's, you're on this, you go, you have a team, there's a road, and there's an end adventure type thing. Right? And then we have our North, I don't know what we'd call that up there, it's a battle, something's going on. I can't put my finger on the plot arc type, but...
Would that be...
What would that be?
Is that due to the problem?
I don't know. I'd have to relook at them, but they're...
I think it's due to the problem.
Battle's going on.
Battle's
up there.
Hey, there's a big threat.
Big threat.
We need to solve it. Yeah.
And with how everything ended, do you want to emphasize why you liked the cycle of things? Why you liked that it ended in that spot?
Oh, I enjoy just the... I normally don't enjoy the idea of like, oh, it's subverting expectations. That means it's good.
Yeah.
In this case, it subverted expectations and is still good. And it was interesting along the way. That's why it's enjoyable. It didn't feel like a rug pull at the very end that, ha, 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 everything means nothing. Ha, 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 reader. It felt intentional, deliberate, and was enjoyable all along the way. And the ending was more satisfying being a failure than it succeeding.
I think you're also primed to enjoy that as well, because the tone of the books itself and the type of characters here, ending like that, a good plot twist or subversion does two things. I've talked about this on here before, but both the subversion makes sense. It was set up properly. And also the subversion is more interesting than if the opposite happened.
Yeah, like right? if in Dagoska, Glockta actually won, and the Union came in at the last minute and saved the day, and
it feels like a different story.
Yeah, it'd be kind of weird.
And the fact that all these plots end in that kind of cycle way, I didn't mind at all. I'm not my above average rating here is going. I appreciate that about it. I've just found through both these novels now, for some reason, this is where maybe people will disagree. For both these novels now, I'm highly invested in the characters. We'll watch them do anything, but don't really care about anything else going on. Like what happens with the cities, what happens with the Goska or the North or the Union, because it's all kind of grim and I'm not rooting for any particular, I don't care who wins in this whole grand scheme of thing. I super care for the characters and the mysteries and all that going on. I could care less. I just care what arcs they're going through and how they're interacting with each other. So the plot, the juice, the stuff that's happening, I'm just going, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then going right back to, okay, give me some more Logan. Just give me some more of like Logan and Pharaoh's uncomfortable tension, or give me some more of like Glockta dealing with why is he doing this? Tell me, why is he doing this? So I've just found the plot for this. It's not a bad plot. I like the overall theme of it. I've just found every investment I've had as the story progresses, as the story beats happen. Like Ida and Worms being the being the killers down, and not a bad thing that happened. Didn't surprise me, didn't wow me. Just going, okay, this is bringing our characters to the next step. It feels like very much a vehicle to make our characters interplay. So I focus way less on the plot. I think for these two books, for me, it's just it's a vehicle to make these characters shine. And the plot just feels like a vehicle. So that's my overall feeling on it.
I really enjoy how the plot twist actually got me through most of this book.
Nice.
It's
nice.
Not necessarily that the traitors were who they were, because I think that's not the twist. It's more how Glockta will respond and how Glockta has these plans within plans and actually able to outthwart all these little obstacles that ultimately means nothing at the end. But he has accomplished so many great things. How he worked, all of those details and overall fitting into the larger plot of trying to figure out what the hell's happening in this background. Like it seems like we're all being manipulated. Like Baez,
you know who it is? Kalul. You know who it really is? It's BlackRock.
they've gotten into
they're here too.
Fallage and Bulk, BlackRock. Yeah. Yes. I mean, fair. But yeah, no, Valentin Bulk being this such an influential. So one, think about the mystery aspect of Glockta's a pretty influential character in Ardua.
Yeah, my pronunciations are going to be awful too.
Whatever.
I'll go anyway, with Ardua.
Ardua. I think that's wrong.
Are you saying Arda? What are you trying to say?
The city. Like the
Ardua, right?
Ardua. I don't think they know
what we're talking about. They know what we're talking about.
Ardua.
How's it spelt exactly in the book? Let's see.
There's a map, right?
No. He famously hates maps. Did you know that?
Oh.
You didn't know that.
I feel like I was told this.
I think I told you it last episode.
Probably.
Let's see. City in First Law. It is spelt Ardua, A-D-U-A. Ah. Not Ardua. Yeah, so Ardua.
Ardua.
Yep.
Ottawa.
Sounds like Ottawa. Canada. It's Canada the whole time. That's a plot twist. The grim, dark world of Canada. These damn Canadians.
Are
ruthless.
They've been playing all of us for fiddles.
Yes. So Ardua, and you're talking about how Glockta is influential there.
Think about how much of an influence he is and how he was thrown off by the Bank of Valentin. Like, how the hell does he not know how influential this bank is? That it basically owns most of these nobles and control over the Mercers and this looming presence, and he doesn't know how. It doesn't make sense how he wouldn't even know about the bank. Hmm. And so, like, its influence doesn't make sense for how he doesn't know. And so it's a huge mystery to me of why doesn't he know?
Gotcha.
What's going on here? He should be far more, like, we know how smart he is. Anyway, so we have all that.
Everything the mystery with, elements to you.
Everything with Baez, the Northmen, and Bethod going, like, now the Shankar actually following Bethod. What's going on here? Because then we get tied into with, like, is he working with Kalul? I don't know. Let's see what's going on. But it seems like everything is just pawns on this bigger chessboard, and it's fun to try and piece
thing it together. Is, I love the pawns. I hate the chessboard. I'm here for the pawns. I'm like, Glockta, pawn away. Do your thing. And the larger looming mystery to me is less interesting. That's just where it comes from. And I think for you gave it the 4-5 spectacular. Was there something that you'll think back to this plot, besides the cycle and the theme of it? Is there the mystery aspect, with Glockta, was there something with I guess we talked about the promise. So what was set up was these different plot lines, the archetypes of the murder mystery type, the why done it, and the golden fleece, etc. We talked about the finale of this is how they all concluded, it was a cycle. And what about the progress part, the middle of the book? was the exciting part there, the mysteries and with Glockta, the
it's the through line. I think there were some great action moments along the way. Cool. I really enjoyed the battle with the big massive failure where West barely gets out alive carrying the prince. I liked that battle of watching a doomed battle of like West knows it's going to fail and can do nothing, can't really go against the prince's orders, tries every little which way to change the prince's mind, and ultimately ends in failure. Enjoyed it. Enjoyed the hell out of stuff like that.
Okay.
Then everything with Glockta, of course, we talked already at length of it. Enjoyed that whole mystery, the investigation, him thwarting things. It's great.
What about the Logan Baez stuff? All that?
Again, it's the Baez mystery. Him fraying at the edges. What's going on? What is the seed?
And okay.
The main thing is every time, like, as it's going on, the plot's going, he meets someone, he's unfraying a little bit. He's becoming a bit more unhinged.
So a lot of it's
every
kind of
friend he meets that should be on his side. They're like, oh, yeah, we're all in agreement. Kalul, gotta go. We'll team up with you.
But.
And then Baez just kind of goes crazier and it's going, okay, man, you're pushing away even your allies. And they're all hinting at something else that's happened in his past that makes him a pretty bad person.
So as everybody is here in this world.
Yes. Yeah. And so I'm invested in that kind of stuff with him.
Gotcha. It seems like that's the through line, whether you're invested or not in the larger chessboard is what makes it more compelling plot.
Yeah.
I think the story beats as it goes. As you're thinking about talking it out, is that 4-5 standing? Or do you think?
Yeah, I'll leave it. I'll leave it 4-5.
Good. I'll lower it just to offset.
Yeah, sure.
Do you want to go into world? Because a lot of what we're touching on in that mystery goes into the world. What'd you give world building out of 5 stars?
4.25. Really what'd you give it?
So this is where the disconnect is. I give it 3 out of 5 stars. Flat neutral.
I get it. I understand why you would give it for same reasons of I'm invested in the world and history of what Baez is. I love the cultures of the Northmen, all that, but it seems like you're not interested as much in the chessboard.
If I had to show you the totter here, if the present day and the tone make so consistent, makes sense, I get the Northmen, the cultures, great. History, could care less. Exactly that.
Fair enough. The two big draws for me is, it's not particularly the Gurkish. I'm not as interested in them. I think they're great villains, added in this big looming threat.
Serviceable. Yeah.
Serviceable. I liked a little bit of their culture of how brutal they are and they can be. Cool. Eaters, the mystery behind what they are. Cool.
Some magic, yeah.
The two things I really liked was everything Baez was showing us at the end of the world of this history of this dead city. I enjoyed that. How about the description of the trees haven't even rotted because a rot is a type of life. It is that dead. And so what has happened and him talking about these battles of this isn't even the worst one or like it's just all of us finding out about what happened with Baez and against Juvens and Canadius enjoyable, but more so culture wise, I loved the Northmen. Love the Northmen culture. It's so much fun hearing the little bits about their songs, their history, how their packs work. How do they choose a new leader? All the stories, there was a little segment there, Shivers, the singing songs, and it's about the Bloody Nine, and the Dogman talks about, like, all the old songs have been forgotten and have been replaced by the Bloody Nine. Ah, so good! I love that little piece.
I love the Bloody Nine,
but it also just, it's such a great line to describe how the Northmen work as a culture of they have a strong disconnect from any kind of history, legacy, anything like that, and far more just meritocracy. Who's currently the best? What's effective now? And they do have a sense of honor that from the old ways that seems to be dying, that Three Trees follows. So loved it. Love everything to do with the Northmen. They're my favorite part and my favorite culture to learn about. So.
We got to read A Song of Ice and Fire, I think, because a lot of the Dothraki you'd probably love well. You, I think that would be your new favorite book.
I don't doubt it.
Yeah, with the Northmen, I don't have any issue with the present. Yeah,
my biggest fear of starting A Song of Ice and Fire is not that I don't I'm not afraid that I won't like it. And like, oh, I don't want to read.
You're afraid you'll love it.
I'm afraid I'm gonna love it,
and then it won't finish.
And then it won't finish.
Yeah,
and that's my fear.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. A wise man's fear, as you'd say.
Bad book. Probably I haven't read it.
Let me make sure I made the right reference.
It's the second book to the Name of the
Wind. I was making sure, yeah, and that also won't be finished was the joke.
Yes. Okay. No, I got the joke. It was good.
Got it. I was making sure I wasn't referring to like some. Okay, that was the right.
Novel. It was the right joke.
Got it.
It was funny.
Good. Okay.
And I enjoyed it.
Okay, I'm funny. Good.
Good.
There's nothing more unfunny than saying I'm funny.
Like, let me explain the joke.
There's
you,
nothing
even further.
Explaining it and to, having to convince yourself. Okay.
No. See, I did the
no,
proper.
I
did the proper setup of setting up. That, hey, look, it's the subversion. It's the joke is actually against you because the joke's on you because you answered the door when I said knock, knock. And you said, like, and haha, who's there? Well, joke's on you, banana. Ah. Yeah, I get it. I know how jokes work. Set up, punchline, it's all good.
Love it.
Who's the subject of the joke? Who are you laughing at?
Mainly the subject of the joke's the most important part of the joke.
You know,
whoever's the subject, I mean...
Safe answer is always yourself.
Yeah. See, where it gets dicey is when you pick races.
But they're some of the most fun.
They are.
Here's the thing. The best guy humor is a multi-ethnic group of guy friends.
Oh, you know it.
That are just making racist jokes at everyone. That was some of my favorite parts in high school. We had in our group of friends, we had one African-American, one Nigerian-American. Different. Close, but different.
Very different, yeah.
Very different cultures. It's like, to note the same, they're not the same here. Then we had several Mexicans. Then we had a Korean and Chinese-American. And then, who else did we have? And then, of course, white guys. I was one of them. I was one of the whites.
Represent. Yeah. Like,
that's a pretty, like, yeah, there are other groups out there, but that's a pretty diverse group of friends. It was just tons of racist jokes back and forth. Like, I felt like I gained an education on the amount of honky jokes that could be told and also the jokes that go the other way. And it was all so fun. And it brought us closer
together. There's nothing more fun than ribbing on someone for something they can't control. You know?
Oh, it's yeah.
Because when you make a joke about something they can control, like, hey, Rich, I got something for you. Mm-hmm. I haven't been appreciating your work ethic lately. And you're like,
that hurts.
Oh, my God. You're awful. Like, if you go, Austin, hey, Austin, you've really been kind of, you haven't been doing so good at the gym lately. Are you still working out? Like,
yeah.
And I go, Rich, I've been struggling lately.
What the fuck, man? Hard.
But then I go, hey, Rich, you shine brighter than Gondor. Like,
no, that's you are right. It is, it's hurtful to make fun of someone when, like, it's something they could do. Like, you know,
you can change it. Agency over that. What the hell, man?
Yeah, it hurts. And sometimes those jokes are warranted, sometimes they're needed.
How you push your friend sometimes.
But the non consequential jokes, it's like you make fun of someone for the color of their skin. Like,
their food.
Their food, yeah. Whatever. It's an immutable characteristic. To some degree, you just can't take that seriously.
I think
just silly.
I think we're doing a breakdown of racist jokes today. This is great.
It's wonderful.
So we're talking about world building of first
off. By the way, this applies to friends. You don't just like...
toss that out there.
You don't
on
just
ether.
Sling that out there. Like, that's...
Well, the bold ones.
The bold ones. They do. You know, the brave ones. The brave heroes. They're willing to just sling those kind of jokes out to everyone.
All the characters in First Law, I think, would do that. Without question.
Oh, yeah. They all have brass balls.
Brass balls. Well, Glockta has... Does he have... Does Glockta have no balls, right?
He's only have one testicle. I don't know. I don't think he's complete.
That's a world-building element we needed to learn more about. Some more details into... Anyways, the genitals of some of our characters here. So for the world in general, I think our disconnect is I don't care much about the history. You do.
Yeah.
Which I guess one of the things... we'll cap with this.
Oh,
I'm going for...
Oh, I got something in my eye and I cannot get it out.
Like a fuzz or something like that?
I don't know. It is... frustrating. It hurts. Yeah.
Want me to check it out? We could have a little live cam feed of seeing how
live
I
live cam feed of what put you put something in my eye?
Did you get it?
You put sand in my eye?
Oh, the Spider-Man 3 meme.
I'm gonna put some dirt in your eye.
I'm gonna put some dirt in your eye. How do you even get there because you have glasses on? That's so.
I know.
Oh, okay. Okay. So
continue on.
We can move on from world. I think we got our point with the history versus interest. So, want to go into pros?
Sure.
What'd you get pros out of 5 stars?
4.5.
Same as last one, right? I also gave it 4.5. Still spectacular to read.
He's a spectacular writer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just all the dialogue is peak.
On point.
Peak. Dialogue. It's the best. And then, of course, everything with internal monologues we're getting now. We, of course, read the intro quote there. There's
well, that wasn't really his. I mean, he
it's
quoted
a quote
somebody
from
else.
Someone else. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We shouldn't attribute that to Joe. But other stuff.
Why not? We can take it. Just steal it. Who's going to know better?
What was the most descriptive scene for you in this book? I mentioned one earlier. I can refresh you and see if you have a different one.
Go ahead.
The scene of them hanging off going to fall to fight the Shanka, and that entire sequence, my heart was pounding. Just the way it was described, my heart was pounding.
I mean, for me, probably the best description is when the Bloody Nine comes out.
The Berserk.
The Berserker Bloody Nine is some of the best action written, period. It's some of the most exciting action I'm ever going to get. Hands down.
Now imagine that action throughout a whole book. Red Rising!
Not even close.
We were getting along until now.
Red Rising has moments that is like gets as good as Joe Abercrombie. It's not the whole fucking time.
It's literally the whole time. The entire series, it's nonstop slaps. Unironically, actually believe this. I'm not joking. I love every action scene ever in Red Rising.
It's all good. It's all
did you
good
mean
to
say
great
excellent
stuff.
And floor? I think that's what you meant, but I'll allow
it's
it.
It's good to great.
I'll allow the pass.
Darrow has nothing on the Bloody Nine.
The Bloody Nine wishes he had the aura of Darrow. He wishes he had the aura of like Darrow's sidekick.
You're insane. You're insane. It's the Bloody Nine.
I think
10 times out of 10, the Bloody Nine comes out on top. And
oh,
it's
in a
just,
fight? In a fight. It's not always about who would physically win.
No, but just exciting in description. Like the fight scenes, I will take a Bloody Nine fight over a Darrow fight.
I will
any
take
day.
A twitching meat carpet any day of the week. While also saying these scenes are incredibly written. I think I love a good action scene, and this gives me it.
You like a good action scene?
Breaking news, putting up on the screen. Austin likes action. So I love the description and the action here. I think I want me to read
you read Red Rising for the racism, not the action.
all these the golds. Why don't they just push the reds more?
I just like it when they separate the colors.
Just keep doing that.
Keep doing
it. Lysander's really on to something. We shouldn't spoil too much. So,
no.
Okay. Want me to give you my favorite quote?
Yeah.
Here's my favorite quote from Koska, your boy Koska.
Ah.
Honor, eh? What the hell is that anyway? Every man thinks it's something different. You can't drink it. You can't fuck it. The more you have, the less good it does you. And if you've got none of it, you don't miss it. Just. Nice Koska quotes. He had a nice presence. That what did you say? Energy. The oh my goodness, not Johnny. Oh, who the heck? Captain. Dun, 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 dun,
Captain
dun.
Jack Sparrow.
Yes, Captain Jack Sparrow.
I was thinking of the drunken man from Drunken Kung Fu Fighter, Jackie Chan.
Gotcha.
But also, yeah, he does have the Jack Sparrow energy.
Very much. Overall, just bloody awesome prose.
Bloody damn, huh?
Bloody damn. I miss me some Red Rising. Oh,
bloody
well,
damn.
That was another episode. Rich, you want to sign off with just a good old whatever you do?
Yeah. I mean, if you like the book, you can comment down below if you want to. Or, comment down below how much the Bloody Nine is better than Darrow of Lycos.
You know what? I feel like you should, comment down below either Darrow greater than Bloody Nine or Bloody Nine greater than Darrow. I have a feeling
make
since
it
we're
easier,
on a...
just comment either Darrow
whichever one
or Bloody Nine.
I have a feeling since it's a First Law video. Bloody Nine might win this one.
It may.
Just might. Anybody that watches an hour and a half worth of this.
We need to do another Red Rising video.
And then do
that
the same
again.
Thing. See what
I
they
still
think.
Blood Red Rising is going to win on that one.
If it does, I'll cry. All right. We'll see you all next episode.
Bye y'all.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Ohio seniors, make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.